Jell is Zool Bailey, one of the busiest guys in classical music. Just flew into town, and he'll be playing Thursday night at the Mesa Arts Center. But I'm so glad you had time to come by and talk with us about the concert coming up on Thursday night. When it says guest artistic director, Mesa Arts Center, what's your goal here?
This all started with friendship and trust with Randy Vogel at the Mesa Arts Center and myself. I've known him for a long time. I've known him since the 1900s. I had a girl come up to me the other day. I was telling a story, and she said, "I'm sorry, Mr. Bailey, were you born in the 1900s?
Really?
Yes. And I said, "Are you 13? And she said, "Yes." And I realized at that moment that I'm one of those now. We're all one of those.
Welcome to the club.
But I've played on his series many different times, and I've changed the programming of how I was presented each time. And the last time, I was kind of in full bloom with the Bach cello suites here, doing something that it was very near and dear to me that has affected all of the series that I'm involved in. And we had a very, very intense discussion about the future of classical music and how that kind of programming has affected all the things that I've been involved in. And after that intense discussion, he, being a very forward-thinking man, asked if I could, in my schedule, be involved to kind of light that torch and make sure that it shines bright here in Arizona. And I agreed because it's a personal a relationship that I have with Randy and what he does. But also, as we were talking, I've played here quite a bit over the past decade and a half, two decades, and I think this community deserves this kind of accessibility to classical music in this regard.
And you have enough history now to know, and you've been back with the Mesa Arts Center,
right,
with the Phoenix Symphony, mm-hmm, and playing different venues, that it really is. It's a burgeoning place. You know, we tend to, as a classical radio station, I work with people who tend to pigeonhole that it's the old people's radio station. And you go out in the public and you meet all these young kids,
mm-hmm,
who aren't prodigies. Mm. They just think it's cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me about Thursday night. How did this come up?
I stumbled across Emily Bear through a couple of happenstances. I was in the midst of many projects in January of a couple of years ago, and I was recording for the company Telarc, which is a classical recording company, under the umbrella of Concord Records, which is a jazz label. Concord was producing with Quincy Jones this recording of this young, prodigious talent, Emily Bear. And the recording had been made the previous spring. And I always think of the Saturday Night Live skit where Christopher Walken says it needs more cowbell, because they had mixed the entire record, and Quincy Jones said, "It needs cello. It needs cello." And so Concord and Telarc being working together, and me being in the stable of performing artists, recording people with Telarc, they called me and asked if I was available to meet Emily and to lay down the tracks that she'd written for this recording. And of course, with the whole history of acknowledging the fact that Quincy Jones has the Midas touch, and everything that he has done in his life, he knows exactly what he's doing, and to recognize a talent like this must be off the charts, because of course Michael Jackson was significant as well. I immediately said yes, and they flew down to El Paso, Texas. I had 3 days off in between other projects, and I met her, played with her, and in a recording studio, and then we laid down the tracks for this. Subsequently, after when she started kind of improvising in the studio, I asked her if this was right in the middle of the festival that I was running in El Paso, if she would possibly come make a surprise appearance at a concert the following day before she left. And she did, and they went crazy. Because, first of all, it's genius, and I can describe her playing in a second. But secondly, when you see someone this young and unaffected by the world, who sits down and just smiles and starts playing music that within seconds you forget that she's this little girl, you start to kind of think about just everything that life brings in that regard, and how music affects you. And then you're reminded again, maybe 10 minutes later, that this is at the time, a 10 or 11-year-old girl doing this, and she wrote the music, which is even more crazy. So after that, we toured this CD for a little bit. I got to meet Quincy Jones and hear him talk about her and kind of describe what makes this such genius and such off-the-chart magnitude of talent. And I had already drunk the Kool-Aid because I saw it firsthand. But to hear him talk about it with his existence as a jazz musician and a rock producer and everything else, I put it in perspective, kind of not just, it's hard to explain, but I'll try. The word prodigy is overused. It's used to sell anything, that if someone who's talented. We talk about people in the past like Mozart or Mendelssohn as being so extraordinary that they kind of dwarf, it comes around once a century kind of thing. And until I saw Emily, I reserved the word prodigy for somebody who was so mind-bogglingly, I didn't understand what they were doing and how they were doing it. I can go on record by saying I've never heard her make a mistake. I've never heard something that seemed or sounded like an error.
Really?
I've never seen it. And I've played with her many times.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but very often she's under the circumstances of playing pieces she's composed and also playing things she's improvising.
Yes, on the spot. Yeah. And that's part of the thing that she's going to do on Thursday night. So on Thursday night, it's a platform to show the Mesa, Phoenix area a talent that they guarantee you they've never seen. They're going to see the kind of talent that is classically trained but not classically bound. And they're going to see someone who plays jazz who's written everything. They're not, you know, people like me don't exist 150 years ago. People like her did because they were composers/performers. The interpreter side of the equation kind of started in the 1900s, people who played other people's music. But she'll sit down and play all the things that she has written. She also plays this game where she asks someone to tell a story. Just give me some kind of, and she writes the soundtrack on the spot to that story with the music, and it's mind blowing. Mm-hmm. Because it is really the power of music for soundtracks at how music paints a picture. And I'll be joining her for a couple of pieces that from her recording Diversity.
Okay, that begs the question: yeah. How are your chops at improvising?
They are not non-existent. I said you need to write this out, and we need to rehearse it, because you know, she just feels it. Of course, she wrote it, so she can improvise and riff all over it. But I feel a nice pride to say that in the process of evolving this very simplified cello part, we did augment it slightly based on my showing her what the cello could do in range. I don't know if she'd worked with cello a lot before this project with this recording, but I gladly give her the control and sit there in kind of shock and awe watching her you know, fly through the air.
You made a remark earlier. I just want to make sure I understand. You said she's not classically bound. You were talking about bound by being this kind of musician, not that she's, if she chooses to be a classical composer, she might be.
Very likely, very right. Could be. She's already written soundtracks for...
So classically bound means she's not held back by the constraints of being...
Well, I say that because when you talk about what jazz is mm-hmm. versus what classical music is, in regards to being an interpreter of such specifically minute detail, a following what a great composer would want in every way, and making sure that it's that with your scalpel you've cleaned and gone through every detail. When she does that, plays the Schumann Piano Concerto, which I've seen, or plays something like that, you can hear all of those things, but you can also, there's a spice in there that you can tell that when the cadenza were to come up, you would hear something again that would be so individualistic and supercharged and in the style of, or maybe not. Mm-hmm. So yes, classically, when I say classically trained, that's a compliment, because that means it's refined. It's refined and studied and strong. When I say not bound to it, that's also a compliment, because that means, you know, sometimes classical music presentation can be stodgy, where it's in a box because it's so trying to be perfect that it doesn't lift. And that does not happen with her. It's going to be a very accessible evening. I don't like feeling when I go to a classical concert like I'm going to the aquarium. I actually want to swim with the sharks. I want to feel like I'm a part of this. And that was one of the reasons why Emily was one of the first to be invited here, because she does involve the audience with asking to tell stories or to yell out tunes that they love, or, you know, because there's a jazz evening as well. There's a jazz group coming to play with her as well. So it's going to be a very, very different kind of event. And I really do urge people, if they're curious about it, this is the one to go to, because it'll give you insight into this entire series, which has Rachel Barton Pine coming in the spring playing the complete 24 Caprices of Paganini, as well as Pictures at an Exhibition featuring Natasha Peremski with visuals of the paintings. We're going to have audio, visual, food, everything else at these events throughout the years. And it all kicks off on Thursday with Emily Bear.
When you get to the mosh pit, let me know that.
When I leave. That's when it's over.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Bill Bailey.
Thank you.